Through the centuries, we developed different principles. David Hoffman was one of the first ethical theorists who addressed the issue. And he said, I'll never permit professional zeal to carry me beyond the limits of sobriety and decorum. Made a number of statements about that. We get down to 1908, our first canons, our first ethical code in the United States, and it said the same thing. Thou shalt act within and not without the bounds of the law. We come down to our modern codes and on down, let me skip all the way down to the current disciplinary rules. Now they say in the preamble the same thing, that you in all functions should zealously pursue clients' interests within the bounds of the law. So the problem for you dealing with immigration law, whether it's DHS or EOIR, which I always tell my daughter, who's an assistant federal public defender who does a lot of immigration illegal reentry stuff, really should be called EOIR for a lot of reasons. But she says that's not the name. The Texas disciplinary rules, the main rules that address advocacy, and these rules are similar to what you see in the ABA model rules, and they're similar to what you will see at DHS and at EOIR. They have very similar rules. Some of theirs are even broader than our disciplinary rules. But these are the major barricades on the side of the road. Rule 301, duty to avoid frivolous positions. 302, duty to avoid increasing costs and delays. 303, to avoid false statements of material fact or law. 304, don't falsify evidence. 305, no ex parte, probably not a big problem. 401 is a big rule, and we'll talk about it in hypotheticals. And it says, thou shalt not make any false statement of material fact or law to anyone. 303 addresses the tribunal, the court. But let's think about the interviews that people do and if you know or participate in a false statement. 402, we'll talk about the anti-contact rule. You don't contact the party on the opposing side without the lawyer's permission, generally. And 804A3, we sometimes call the garbage pail rule. It is the broadest rule of all, and it basically says, thou shalt not engage in deceit, fraud, dishonesty, or misrepresentation of any type. That rule is so broad that lawyers get disciplined for misconduct that relates not at all to law practice. Not paying bills. There's a famous case where a lawyer had an argument with a travel agent and didn't pay the bill and got disciplined for that. So that's out there, and we see it in almost every disciplinary case in Texas just because they throw it in because it's so broad and so powerful. Then you have this whole panoply of counterpart criminal provisions, state and federal, as you know, and you may have seen some federal prosecutions arising from immigration law. And my daughter was telling me about some of those not long ago. But we have prohibitions against bribery and false statement and perjury and suborning perjury. And those things that are kind of obvious. You know you don't do them, but there are criminal statutes out there. And occasionally we see lawyers who get dragged into that. I've got one case that's similar to that right now. And then you have, once you go into court, federal court, you have the inherent power sanctions doctrine, in addition to a lot of other sanctions weapons that federal judges have. And I've got about $500,000 in sanctions right now on appeal, just one at the Fifth Circuit against one lawyer, and then I've got a third one at the Texas Supreme Court as well under inherent power sanctions. So if it gets that far, it gets to be a whole different realm of problem, and federal judges can be difficult. Okay, EOIR. The attorney discipline program, and I've talked to EOIR in preparing for this to see what they were focused on and what they're seeing and what the problems are they're seeing. The statute, the regulatory authorization is very broad, and it talks about criminal, unethical, unprofessional conduct, frivolous behavior, and then they have a series of rules, both EOIR and DHS, that address a variety of specific kinds of conduct that they can charge you with. And either one can charge you, and you end up before an immigration judge defending yourself. Charging a grossly excessive fee, bribery, false statement, with reckless disregard, making a false statement, or misleading or misinforming, engaging in rude conduct. And, you know, that's Can you get judges on that? Well, not under this rule, but there are rules at every level of judicial tribunal that address rude conduct. Obviously, those aren't enforced often. And having been convicted, falsely certifying a copy of a document, frivolous behavior, conduct prejudicial to the administration of justice, failing to provide competent representation, and I'll come back to some of the scare stories I hear, failing to disclose controlling legal authority. So that's a pretty wide waterfront of potential violations that you can find yourself charged with. And the procedure is very simple. Anyone can file a complaint. You can file it. Someone off the street can file a complaint. The EOR or DHS will investigate it. And if they find they can work out a settlement or resolve something informally. But if they find that there are grounds, they can file formal charges against you, and then those will be assigned to an immigration judge, and you will be in the dock instead of your clients before the immigration judge. And then after that hearing, there'll be a judgment, and you can appeal to BIA, Board of Immigration Appeals. As I say, the practice works basically the same before both entities. But that's the procedure, pretty simple. Here are some recent cases that EOR likes to talk about. If you ask them, well, you know, who's being disciplined recently for what? They'll give you these sites.